Is this thing on? One, two, mic check, one, two. All right.
Man, this is our city. This is our city, man. We did it, man. It's unbelievable.
Feel like Black Jesus.
We've seen the story before.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Understand this guy's eye for talent. He drafted KD, Russ, Jeff Green, Serge Ibaka, Reggie Jackson.
He was the best player on any team I was on. But if there was a buyout possibility, there was a trade possibility, I would always reach out to the team. I called Ursa.
In all these long centuries of which we boast, when an absolute guarantee against you.
By the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed.
Playing the journey, kill the train deadline. The player's journey, kill the train deadline. The player's journey, kill the train deadline. The player's journey, kill the train deadline. Player's journey, kill the train deadline.
Point of contention.
The MVP over there, Sam Preston. He the MVP.
Guess who wasn't in the email? Whose name was not in the email?
Welcome to Point of Contention. Five subjects, 5 minutes, 5 points of contention. Coming up on the show, a brewing war in Los Angeles. Zion Lion, the dragon lands in Brooklyn. Adam Silver shuts the door on the press. And panic time in Phoenix. Happy Banana Bread Day, everybody. I'm Zach Harper. Jay Hoy is producing in this corner from the hard streets of Springfield, Massachusetts.
Longmeadow.
Celtics beat reporter and future author of the book, Mr. Softy, A Guide to Growing Up in Longmeadow, Massachusetts. It's Jay, the kid of Peloton King.
That's me.
Jay, can you tell me exactly how many NBA players will be trained by a virtual reality metaverse hologram called Coach Nat?
What was that, man? And why did it have Shaq's voice? Like, of all the people.
My role is to help coach, train, develop the next generation of NBA talent.
It was Adam Silver as Steve Buscemi walking up to the internet and saying,
"How do you do, fellow kids?"
What?
That's all that was. There is none of that stuff. Yeah, Shaq is the voice of a virtual coach? That's not happening.
You know, Chris Brickley and Drew Hanlon were watching that like, oh man, I'm going to be able to hologram
stressed
coach dudes one
they
day.
They were stressed that they were getting out interneted by Adam Silver.
Coach Nat.
I don't know what that was,
Coach,
man.
Nat with Shaq's voice just hanging in the air.
Awful. And he can fly?
Yeah, I mean, why not?
That's what I don't understand. I don't understand what this was. Yeah. All right. In this corner, from the sweet streets of New Orleans, Crescent City's finest Pelicans beat reporter and future author of the book Big But Not So Easy, the Zion Williamson story, it's Will Guillory. Will, what bird you got? The pelican, the eagle, or Larry?
Oh, man. I got to go pelican because that's the state bird, right? So I'm going to roll with pelican, man. I'm just happy to be here making my point of contention debut. Trying to have a rookie season that lasts a little bit longer than Z's was. Hopefully I can make it more than the 20-something games, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, luckily you're going against the Greg Oden of the pod in Jay King here, so I think we'll be good.
Cold-blooded. That was cold-blooded.
Hey, speaking of wars brewing where they shouldn't, Jade, start the clock. Take one, Sam Presti. You're the real MVP. The big story over the weekend wasn't Michael Jordan hugging Luka Doncic like a giddy fifth grader, nor was it a baffling amount of time it took the 76 best NBA players of all time during halftime of the All-Star game. I think that might still be going. I think they're still trying to get a few guys in there. Alas, it was LeBron James' future. The first shots were fired during a press conference on Saturday when James praised Oklahoma City's GM, Sam Presti, out of nowhere. Quote, "The MVP over there is Sam Presti. He's the MVP," James said. Jay, play the tape.
"The MVP over there is Sam Presti.
He the MVP. I mean, Josh Giddey is great. Sam Presti, I don't understand. This guy's eye for talent. He drafted KD, Russ, Jeff Green, Serge Ibaka, Reggie Jackson, Josh Giddey, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on on and on and on. This guy's pretty damn good.
It followed with LeBron's cryptic message to teams that he would be willing to come play with any team that drafts his son, Bronny James.
He hasn't played. Is he healthy?
Who's that?
Hinting at a possible return to Cleveland to boot, whether for a season or merely a performative one-day contract. Yes, folks, the King put the Lakers on notice in what appears to be an intense power struggle between LeBron James, Clutch Sports, and general manager Rob Pelinka. LeBron and company are reportedly unhappy about Pelinka's inaction at the trade deadline. LeBron reportedly wanted Pelinka to do something to undo the crap that he did in the offseason, but the GM was unwilling to part with the team's 2027 first-round pick. It's probably going to be a top-three pick for what it looks like. The Athletic's Bill Oram added that a source told him the vibe within the organization feels like, quote, the early days of a war.
That's so dramatic. I love it. I love it.
We shall prove ourselves once more able to defend our iron home, to ride out the storm of war.
Jay, the Lakers season looks to be coming to an end in disastrous fashion. Is LeBron's time with the Lakers coming to an end as well?
I think the Lakers should blow it up. They should trade LeBron. They should trade Anthony Davis. They should replenish their draft picks, because to me, obviously, those two guys are two of the best players in the league, still in LeBron's case. But I just don't see a path to contention. They don't have enough draft capital. They don't have any trade assets that people want, unless you're a huge Talen Horton Tucker guy. There's no reasonable path to them contending again, especially when you factor in that LeBron is not going to be getting better at this stage. I honestly think they need to consider blowing it up, because I just don't know what other options will be available. There, Russell Westbrook, who they should want to move, I'm sure they do want to move, is a huge, huge minus. It kind of reminds me of the end of the Rockets days with James Harden and Russell Westbrook, where everyone's trying to concoct ways for them to build out the supporting cast. And at some point, there's just nothing you can do. You got to step back and step away.
Will, how excited are Pelicans fans over these Lakers picks right now? Because I feel like, this could be very fruitful for the Pelicans here.
Nah, Pelicans fans, I think, are just joyous about any failures on the part of the Lakers. They just want to see LeBron and AD take all the L's, so they just enjoying every bit of it. They probably won't even get the Lakers pick this year, because it's probably going to Memphis as part of that Jonas Valanciunas trade. Yeah. I for one am just completely shocked that this is how this has turned out. Like, what, LeBron forced a trade in the offseason and now he's pointing the finger at the GM? We've never seen this before. I know I'm completely shocked. I just love me a good dramatic metaphor in a sports story where LeBron's going to war.
He's war.
Putting
Everyone's
his armor
in.
And his shield on.
Yeah.
Is LeBron the guy who comes in on the horse with the sword? Is he the guy that comes in with the battle axe?
Yeah.
I think if I'm going to war, I want to be the bow and arrow guy. I want to be one of those guys in the back with the flaming bow and arrow. I think I'm one of those guys. I don't know about y'all.
If you do not agree to my commands, then I shall... Right.
Should LeBron want to trade?
Should he want to trade? No. That's not, guys. That's, come on. We gotta be realistic here.
That's not LeBron's style.
LeBron leaves teams in ruins. Ruins. Yes. And honestly, I think it's smart. Like, he left Miami really just out in the cold there. He left Cleveland out in the cold. And I think it's smart, because why are you going to help the team you're leaving? That immediately becomes an opponent.
But here's the difference. If he spends one more year in a situation where he's not going to win a title now, at this age, these are very rare opportunities now. His last chance is left. He's already squandered Jay, 2 years. Two years in LA. They won a title.
He's trying to get the scoring record, and he's trying to make movies. He doesn't give a shit about titles.
I mean, he's...
No, how about... him convincing AD to come to LA. Hey, AD, sign a max extension. We're going to keep this thing going forever.
Yeah, we got you.
And then
AD.
2 years later, he's like, deuces, bro. Have fun with THT. I'm out of here.
Good luck in the training room today.
I'm just saying, if I'm LeBron and I'm sitting there looking around, and my rotation includes Austin Reeves and Trevor Ariza's old ass, and
next question.
Russ, did you think getting down 38-21, 17-point deficit to come back and make it a game down the stretch, is that a good sign for the rest of the playoffs?
Next question.
God knows what else. Russell Westbrook, I'm looking around like, I need to get out of here. I need to go somewhere I can actually win. This is just – and maybe, like you said, you know, he's going to leave a place in ruins. Maybe he sticks it out. I just think for both sides, it would be better to move on. I think it's actually gotten to that point, which is crazy because, I mean, 2 years ago, they won a title. Last year, I think if they had just stayed healthy, they would have had a chance. But they've mismanaged every single thing along the way, and now I just don't see any realistic path back.
Next question.
Here's my one plea. Leave Cleveland alone. Don't go over there and turn that into the LeBron show. Let them have their fun over there.
Teasing them.
Leave
just
Cleveland alone,
them
yeah, LeBron. Let Garland and Mobley do that thing. Don't go over there and turn it into the LeBron thing.
Hey, Cleveland, would you like to be under 500? I'll come back. Let's do that because that's what it is right now. That's the weird thing, Will, to me, is that LeBron is having a phenomenal individual offensive season. And it's meaningless. That's the funny thing when he's like, hey, you want me on the team? You know, you better draft Bronny in that last year of my career. And I'm just like, yeah, you sell some tickets and you sell some jerseys. I don't think it's going to help you win, though, right now, because like that's proving to be less and less of the impact that he has.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to see how much this team has struggled. Even when AD's been healthy, they've been struggling. I think it's just, you know, everybody wants to put their blame on Russ, and he deserves plenty of it. But I think you're right that LeBron's impact just isn't felt as much as we've seen in the past. Even though his numbers are outstanding, he's just not impacting the game as much. I mean, he still impacted it in great ways, but not quite as much as we've seen in the past.
To answer your question, definitely archer. Like I want, like, one, I've always thought I could be an Olympic archer if I just applied myself, because I only ever did it at like
you
summer day camps, and I was really good.
Your takes never have good aim. I know that.
Oh really? had the bubble heat do?
Huh? He's clinging to the bubble 2 years heat ago.
Yeah, you damn
like
right.
The bubble heat, and they got waxed in the finals. Like that's your thing.
Waxed in the finals and went six games. What are you talking about?
I can see Jay rolling through with the ball with the spikes on it. You swing it on the. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, he would. Jay would definitely Leroy Jenkins this thing, just charge in when it wasn't the right time to do it, and then just claim like that was everybody else's fault. I was ready. I don't know what you guys are doing.
Yeah, pretty much. That's about right.
All right. Take two, Lion Zion.
This is definitely something. This is a little bit insane to me. There's a general sort of decorum of behavior that you should apply as a teammate.
I wasn't the best player on any team I was on.
I wasn't the best player on any team I was on.
Set a good screen on offense. Detonating on the rim. Williamson.
Gotta go.
Oh, he's got it.
This is a little bit insane.
Zion Williamson has been missing from the court this season because of a foot injury, but according to ESPN's JJ Redick, Williamson has been absent as a teammate his entire time in the NBA, reacting to the news that Zion has not reached out to CJ McCollum, who was recently acquired at the trade deadline. Redick went on First Take to berate his former teammate. Quote, "This is a little bit insane to me. There's a general decorum of behavior that you should apply as a teammate." Jade, play the tape.
This is basic, basic level of humanity being a teammate. Send a text to a guy when he gets traded to your team. That is just normal behavior. That's the bar minimum that you have to do. And the Pelicans yesterday sent out an email for season tickets for next year. Guess who wasn't in the email? Whose name was not in the email?
We're sorry.
Zion.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again. This is a recording.
Deny thy father and refuse thy name. Or if thou wilt not, be but sworn, my love, and I'll no longer be a Capulet.
Shall I hear more, or shall I speak?
Zion's.
Ouch. Williamson, who underwent foot surgery during the offseason, has yet to play this season. He has been rehabbing away from the team since early January. As we all know, Zion's desire to play for the Pelicans has been questioned fairly or unfairly since the 2019 draft lottery. Will, I believe you've done a little reporting on this subject. When can we expect Zion to either be moved to play or move to another team? Or maybe that's both. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're still a long way away from him moving to a different team. I think the Pels aren't going to make that type of drastic move until they absolutely have to. And they still got the leverage in their court at this point, especially with these, you know, health question marks going on right now. And I think that's the big thing right now is I don't think anybody has really a clear answer on when he's going to be back on the court or when he's going to be healthy enough to at least just get on the practice court. And you know, for me, I'm just pretty shocked that J.J. Redick has made this turn post-career, being the hot take guy.
Yeah, man.
On First Take. that's pretty shocking to see him go that way. But, I mean, I completely agree with him that it's ridiculous for Z to not hit up C.J. McCollum. We're talking about the dude that's the president of the Players Association, one of the most respected dudes in the league, and you mm-hmm. can't even, like, shoot him a text, say, hey, bro, go check out Drago's and get the charred grilled oysters, or you know what I mean? Like, that's the very least you could do when a guy's coming to New Orleans. The continuing questions of, does he actually want to play with this team? Does he want to win? It's wild because he hasn't actually played with this team. So how can you determine
right.
if you can win with a team? He's played 0 minutes with Herb Jones, 0 minutes with C.J. McCollum, 0 minutes with Jonas Valanciunas, hasn't even gone through a full practice with Willie Green as his head coach. I mean, Zach, how you going to hate from outside the club? You can't even get in.
It's a great question. Like I feel like with Zion, like, look, I think this is a product of youth. That decorum that JJ speaks of, like, I don't know how many young people who would have that responsibility on the franchise Jay would then think like, oh, I guess I got to welcome this dude to the team. I don't even know if that's like reasonable to expect anymore. But like, I don't know how young people are. Like, he's what, 21 years old? I didn't know anything at 21. I don't know anything at 40.
Here's the part where it's turned serious is so Zion, his whole situation, because he's been away from the team, because he's gone through injury issues, because there's this whole mystery surrounding it. You don't really know where his body's at. You don't know how many pounds he weighs. You don't know. Like, there's a lot of mystery around it. But for J.J. Redick to come out and say what he did and say that Zion was a detached teammate. J.J. Redick went to Duke, where Zion went. J.J. Redick was a teammate of Zion's. And to me, the most interesting part of what J.J. said was that he actually addressed Zion about it when they were teammates in the locker room about how he was a detached teammate. And that was when Zion was playing. That was when I assume he was in the lineup. And JJ was still looking at him like, bro, do you even want to be here? And mm-hmm. and so I think JJ in this case has a lot of credibility because there are a lot of reasons for him not to say something like that. For him to sit there and pretend like it's cool what Zion's doing and pretend like it's not a big deal. And even as a Duke guy, even as a guy who played with Zion, he stood up and said he was a detached teammate. And that like that to me, that takes away some of the mystery from it. And mm-hmm. we've all been guessing, like, what does Zion really want to be there? Is he not a part of it moving forward? And right now it seems like he's not. And that's sad because he's really a guy who has the talent to become one of the faces of the NBA. And
yeah.
and he just hasn't approached things right early in his career.
Two things. One, apparently Zion did reach out after CJ brought it up on a podcast and it became a deal, right? So apparently Zion has reached out since then. So I don't know if that's, I don't know if that fixes the issue or not. Like, probably not. But two, it is a little funny, Will, that like JJ, who was like, yo, I don't want to be here. Get me out of here, please. I like you said to Brooklyn, is the one going like, hey, man, you're not dedicated to this team. And I do like they're very different situations, but I do find that to be a little funny.
Yeah, I would say JJ definitely qualified as a detached teammate as well. If you watch some of those games he played last season. But I think one more thing Jay also left out is that Zion's a fellow CAA guy with JJ Redick. So those guys have a lot mm-hmm. of connections. JJ knows him really well off the court. So I think you're exactly right for him to come at Zion yeah. the way he did and on a public forum. I think it says a lot about not only JJ's frustration with the situation, but a lot of people's frustration around around this situation, just a lack of communication. And that's what I wrote in my story today on The Athletic. Go check it out. Quick plug. He just needs to control his narrative. Just speak up and say something. I think he's just been so silent throughout this situation. And we just got finished talking about LeBron James, a guy who has master control over his narrative and everything going on in his career. And Zion's the complete opposite right now. He's just AWOL with all of this. He's got nothing to say. The most we've got out of him since Media Day is a statement when he announced that he was leaving the team to go train on his own. So I think he's got to do a better job just controlling his own narrative, speaking up for himself, and letting it be known how he feels rather than people around Zion Williamson or people familiar with Zion Williamson. He's got to speak up for himself, and that's going to be the thing that allows him to kind of take control of the situation moving forward.
And there's still tons of time. Like, he still has a ton of time to get his body right. He has a ton of time to get things right with New Orleans. But the start to his career has been, like, just sad, honestly. Because when he's on the court, he's a murderer. He was shooting, like, 70% on twos or something.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's a joke. And like running point guard at 280 pounds or whatever. Like,
he was 20 years old.
Just a joke what he can do. That you just want him to figure it out. And New Orleans has done a lot wrong early in his career. I think Dave mismanaged this too. So they're not blameless. But it seems clear that he hasn't approached things right, especially, you know, with the weight of J.J. Redick behind the statement that he said.
JJ's a CAA guy. I wonder how he got on TV for ESPN. Take three. The Dragon lands in Brooklyn. The big domino of this year's buyout market fell as free agent guard Goran Dragic has reportedly agreed to sign with the Nets. The driving factor, according to NBA insider Mark Stein, Goran Dragic wanted to play for head coach Steve Nash. Who doesn't? Former coach Eric Spoelstra told the Miami Herald that while he was sad to see Dragic traded for Kyle Lowry in the offseason, quote, "At the end of the day, this is a bottom line business. It's about winning," end quote. Another Spoism that doesn't really mean anything. And winning will be what Dragic and the Nets will be doing now with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Ben Simmons in the fold. More good news for the Nets, according to Shams Charania. New York City has a plan to phase out the vaccine mandate in the coming weeks, at which point Kyrie Irving will be cleared for home games and becomes a full-time player. Jay, did the Nets seal up the Eastern Conference with these latest two moves and the news of Kyrie being free to play in home games?
No, I still don't think there's anything concrete about the way they'll play. I want to see how they use Ben Simmons. I want to see what type of shape he's in. I want to see how he fits. Are they going to play him as a center? Like, I think that's possible. Like, what, three of their six best players are 6'2 and shorter in Kyrie, Patty Mills, Goran Dragic now. So I have questions about whether they can defend at a high level. I have questions about, you know, what Simmons will look like in playoff time. I have a lot of questions about how this will fit together, but obviously the top end talent is ridiculous. The shooting, if Joe Harris comes back and you've got Joe Harris, Patty Mills, and Kyrie Irving, is just stupid. And you
KD
wonder,
might be the fourth best shooter on that team, which is insane to think about. Like, that's nuts.
No.
Patty, Joe Harris. I'm just talking like three-point shooting.
Don't disrespect KD.
Kyrie,
like
those are three unbelievable shooters.
Maybe standstill three-point shooting, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, I mean, but I don't think Joe Harris is going to do a lot of off-the-dribble work here.
Yeah, none of those guys.
What he's been working on when he's been
none
out.
None of those guys are hitting the shot that KD hit that was supposed to beat the Bucks in the playoffs last year.
Exactly, yeah. I think we're all just, like, this is all good stuff, Will, but, like, we're just waiting for KD to come back, right? Because it doesn't matter if KD's not 100%.
No doubt. And I think the bigger story today was for Brooklyn was the fact that maybe Kyrie's going to be able to play home games. I think that's the more of the game changer. No disrespect to Dragic. But I think, you know, we couldn't take this team seriously at all going into the playoffs unless we knew Kyrie could actually play in the games that mattered. And, you know, when they're at home, they're going to need those games, especially if they're going in as like a 7 or 8 seed, which looks like, this is the most likely scenario right now. So I think that's huge news for them to have Kyrie playing full time, possibly. And also, I agree with you. The first thing I wrote down when y'all sent the topics was, man, this team is way too small to play against the Bucks. you look at that that group they're going to put out there, Patty Mills, Dragic, Kyrie, Joe Harris. I think all of those guys are too small for Chris Middleton, and they're probably too small for Drew Holiday as well.
Drew's a point
monster,
guard. Man. Yeah, Drew's so, never mind. Giannis. Yeah, Drew's exactly. Drew's a 6'2 power forward, man. Like Drew is like,
don't let him get switched on to Giannis. And I think I'll add this to the list. They're too small for Cleveland. If you put those guys in a switch against Evan Mobley or Kevin Love, they're going to get roasted. So I think they got to add one more big wing guy. I think losing DeAndre Bembry was big for them. I think I'm probably the first person to ever say that on planet Earth. Losing DeAndre Bembry was big. But I just think they need to add a little bit more size. They got to get KD back in the mix, of course. But it's huge. We can't undersell how big it is that they're going to be able to play Kyrie in home games, because that's the only way they had any chance. And now they've got some hope, once the big seven-footer comes back.
Jay, I have a little bit of a question, and I don't know if this is load management era infecting my brain, but I immediately thought when I saw the news about the vaccine mandate was like, okay, but like, is Kyrie going to be okay to play all the time now? Right? Because he has an injury history, like he misses a lot of time. And so not that it was better for him to only be available for road games, but I do wonder like if there's some complication in ramping him up to being a full time player, or if that's just overthinking it.
Well, I think that's probably overthinking it. Like a lot of his injuries, man.
I don't know.
He definitely hasn't been an 82 game player even before he decided to take off home games. But to me, that's part of the reason why losing James Harden like just decreases your margin for error. Before, if one of your guys gets hurt, you got two left, and Ben Simmons is not a number two. Like, in a playoff setting, you can't have him be your second best go-to scorer at the end of a game. And so now, if Kyrie does get hurt, they're not going to have enough talent. Versus last year, if they just stayed two of them
I'll
healthy,
say this.
I think they beat the Bucks. I think they have a good chance of winning a championship.
I know like you want to dismiss the Heat in the bubble.
When's the last time he played basketball? He's 35
now.
His defense has fallen off.
You want to talk about guys with injury histories?
Sure.
Dragic is up there as well.
But he's a guy that can like get into anywhere in the defense, right? Like he's great at dribble penetration. He's great in the pick and roll. He's great just breaking a guy down, and he's one of the best finishing guards in the NBA. Like he is someone that if he stays healthy, let's say they do drop Kyrie to injury or whatever, like I do think like that's a way more capable backup than like, oh, let's see if Patty Mills can run the point, right? Like, I mean, Goran's really good.
Agreed. But I think it's interesting they went after him because obviously he was the best buyout guy on the market, the most talented guy, the guy who's been the biggest difference maker, but he's also not a good fit for their roster. Like we said, they're just going to be super small.
Better fit than Javon Carter was.
Well, of course, just because he's better and they play the same position. But I'm saying if you could have gone out and gotten a difference-making wing who, like a Gary Harris type, and shit, maybe they still can.
Right.
But those are the types I would have prioritized over a Goran Dragic.
By the way,
even though Goran Dragic is, the most talented guy on that market.
Gary Harris, really good defender. He's like maybe 6'4". So it still wouldn't help their size, but at least he can defend. Like that's
Bruce Brown.
Sure.
He could defend up a little bit though. And I just think the biggest thing is that as long as there aren't any insurrections from now until June, I think Kyrie's sister's birthday already passed. So there's nothing to worry about. He'll be there for the rest of the games, guys.
Yeah, you don't know when there's going to be an art exhibit that he's got to attend. But you guys didn't really agree with me on the Goran thing. So take four. Get these guys out of here, Jade. Jade and Will, I'm talking about you guys. Get out of here. Speaking to reporters during NBA All-Star Weekend, Commissioner Adam Silver agreed with me, confirmed the worst fears of credentialed media as COVID-19 restrictions begin to wane throughout the country. The press no longer welcome the locker room, kind of. I don't really understand what Adam Silver was saying. Like, he was all over the place with this. Quote, "I think creating a bit of distance may make more sense for the foreseeable future," said Adam Silver. Jade, play the tape.
"I also think it's a bit of an anachronism to have reporters in the actual room where players are dressing."
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
I mean, it used to be, for those who've been around a while, in the old days it was about female reporters. And we all got past that issue. It was ridiculous, it was discriminatory, and made no sense. And at least from my standpoint, I never hear about those issues anymore. I think it's different now. I think there are different expectations of privacy. At the same time, I recognize we have to create an environment where you all can do your job."
Yes, Adam Silver's comments were muddled, but they were also unintentionally revealing, as Ethan Strauss wrote on his Substack, House of Strauss, quote, "The current commissioner seems more enamored with abstract distractions than in selling the game's ground-level reality. Absent media pressure to this point, Adam Silver has turned into a human TED Talk." Jade played that tape.
Two sentences of a conversation between me and Harrison Barnes, where we've got a running joke about something, using a certain name for something, and then they're like, oh, they use an epithet or whatever, and that's the problem. And I think that is a valid concern, Ethan. I think it is. I don't think it's because they make out, but they should just admit it. You know, you don't want me in the locker room, Adam Silver. Just admit it. That's the reason. It's not that big, big of a deal.
Tough thing for Adam to admit. The problem is that if people see or hear what our players are saying, it will completely shatter the image that we're trying to broadcast to the world. I mean, that's a difficult thing for him to say.
As the saying goes, don't ever let a good crisis go to waste. This is from Mark Spears of ESPN. It's insulting to say NBA reporters are standing around in a locker room watching players dress. Before the pandemic, many relationships between NBA players and media were built during that 30 to 45 minute period. If the players don't want to talk, they don't have to. All this coming from a man, perhaps a reptilian. I don't know. I don't know what we're saying. I don't know who is taking over Adam Silver saying that we're just standing around watching dudes dress. Dazzled absolutely nobody with that Coach Nat thing, by the way. I mean, we got to get rid of it. I can't stress enough how bad Coach Nat was as a tech summit reveal. Jade, play that tape.
Holy cow. I mean, we'd heard a lot about him during the pandemic, but I'd never stood next to him.
My role was to help coach, train, develop the next generation of NBA talent. I know all the best moves and am untethered by one single dimension. I can even make a free throw.
Before you leave, anything else you can do that you want to show the audience?
I can even be the real Superman.
All right, Will, what is happening? Does the NBA keep this policy in place indefinitely? And is it fair to the fans to limit some of that coverage and access?
Yeah, I think I have to start off with the Adam Silver comments was just so confusing to me.
Because he said it like three times. He said it like three times. So like, you guys just watching like, him dress? Like, no, we're not.
You actually think not. Reporters are in there staring at guys?
For the most part, players aren't even in the locker room when we're in there.
We're
they avoid
awkwardly
it.
Staring exactly. at each other, waiting for someone to say, hey, by the way, Devontae Graham's available. Like, that's what we're doing.
Exactly. We're all standing around talking to each other, looking at scores from other games and stuff. I promise I'm not staring at Brandon Ingram while he's putting on his socks while I'm in the locker room. That's not what I'm doing in there. But no, I don't want to be the media guy complaining about access because, you know, most of the time fans don't actually care. But I do think that there's value in us being in the locker room and having conversations about with these guys that don't have anything to do with basketball. Like, that's an essential part of the job, is being able to talk to these guys about just normal life, being like, hey, are you watching Snowfall tonight? Did you listen to the new Lil Durk album? Like, there's so much stuff you could talk to and get to know these guys where they're more comfortable talking to you about their actual job. Whereas right now, it feels like so many of these conversations we have with these guys is kind of, all right, turn the camera on. Yes. Yeah. One day at a time. You know what I mean?
Hey, did you think the fans added anything for your effort tonight? Like, how great were those fans? Like, it's just BS.
Talk
like
a little
that.
Bit about the third quarter push. Right. You know, it's like sometimes you just want to have real conversations with these dudes, and that makes the job easier for everybody, not just us. It makes the job easier for those guys, so they can actually walk into the locker room and actually know who we are, know what our names are, know where we came from, you know, why do we wear the shoes that we wear, you know, all that kind of stuff. It helps. And I think just keeping it to the press conference room, while it's better than it was last year, I never want to go back to a Zoom age. It still takes a little bit away from the coverage. And I think, and it's an important aspect of, again, we're covering the NBA. Fans care about these guys so much more than what they're doing on the court. They care about their personality, what they're doing away from the game. And we don't get access to that stuff as much when we can only talk to them about.
And there's so much you can glean from being in the locker room. Like the last year Kyrie was in Boston, you step in that locker room one time and you knew, like, it just wasn't right. Things just weren't right. You could just feel from being there. And
Sage.
And obviously, like, that's not the most important part. The most important part is being able to, like Will said, just develop relationships with these guys so that when you ask them difficult questions about stuff, they're more willing to tell you the truth, or they're able to open up to you. Right now, all the interactions we have with guys, or almost all the interactions we have with guys, are just in a press conference on Zoom, and it's all business, and there's a huge interpersonal aspect that's been missing because we haven't been allowed at practice, because we haven't been allowed in locker rooms, and the coverage.
Yeah,
I mean, we've tried to hide it as best we can, but the coverage has been seriously lacking since the shutdown when Rudy Gobert. Well, like it's just totally different.
Yeah. Jay, I will say this, and I brought this up a little bit on Basket Buds on Monday, but I do wonder, I genuinely wonder, like, if fans care. I'm sure there are some do, but the overall, like, casual fan, I wonder if they give a shit about that. Like, it obviously matters to us, and we know what that means for the coverage, right? We know what that means to develop those relationships, but as long as, like, they get to watch their highlights, they get to, you know, hear about it, like, oh, the fans gave us a boost tonight, and they get to, you know, hear positive things about the NBA, like, I do wonder if there's almost this this idea from the league, directly or indirectly, of like, if it's nothing but positive stuff, like, you know, we would rather that coming out of the teams in the locker rooms than you know, potential criticism. Like, I do think the casual fan is probably more in tune with that idea, because they don't like the criticism, right? Like, I think that possibility exists,
and it's all the good stuff too.
They would listen to us talk about this and go like, guys being babies.
It's not just the criticism. It's all the good stuff too. It's writing a story about this thing that separates a guy, this personality trait, or this great thing he's doing in the community that maybe you overheard a conversation in the locker room, or maybe he was just chatting with you in the locker room about it. And and there's so much stuff like that we've missed because we haven't been at practices. We haven't been in locker rooms. Like I remember just sitting there and Javonte Green would just he could do a Rubik's Cube, and so someone he was saying he could do a Rubik's Cube, someone brought in the Rubik's Cube, he was just doing a Rubik's Cube and stuff like that. like that's interesting, and that's stuff fans care about that we never would have had if we weren't in the locker room. And honestly, like, we're not obtrusive in the locker room. Like, they probably let too many guys in. I think
so. Not probably.
Yeah. So
yes.
And Josh Robbins is probably gonna be mad at me for saying this. But
cut that.
Let fewer people in and let guys who need to be there for their jobs. And we're not obtrusive. We're in there to do work, and we're in there to cultivate relationships, and we're in there to help, you know, make it so that we can work with these guys better. I'm lucky that the Celtics have a lot of holdovers, or a number of holdovers, with guys that I've known in the past. The new players on the team, I barely know. And that's a huge challenge when you're covering someone you barely know, that they don't know you. They see you, you know, in a press conference, and that's it. And that's a huge, huge problem, I think, that really limits the coverage. And it limits stuff that fans care about a lot, and I don't think a lot of people realize, like, the beat writers are the ones that a lot of the time our quotes are the stuff that comes up that's debated on all the shows, whether it's on this show right now, whether it's on another show on ESPN, whether it's on another show wherever else. It's like all the stuff that comes up and is debated comes from beat writers for the most part, and so maybe that's the part that Adam Silver is overlooking too. The more we can get from these guys, the more there is to talk about, and the better topics there are to discuss.
And I thought Jay brought up a great point talking about Javonte Green, because I think something we missed not being in the locker room is just talking to some of these guys who don't play, right? When you're doing press conferences only, basically every game, I'm sure, Jay, y'all are requesting Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown, some combination. For our games, we're requesting Brandon Ingram or CJ McCollum most of the time. But when you get to go in the locker room, I can't tell you how much stuff I learned about Anthony Davis from talking to Elfrid Payton, you know, off the record, talking to Etuan Moore off the record. And you don't get that when you're talking in press conferences. If anything, those guys come in, they never talk, so they're nervous about saying something they shouldn't say in front of the camera. And then you end up getting nothing from those guys. Where if you walk in, there are so many times I walked into the Pelicans locker room and talked to Elfrid Payton for like 10, 20 minutes and didn't even turn on my recorder and didn't want to turn on my recorder, just chopping it up about New Orleans, whatever. And you learn stuff
just from getting to know guys and some of these guys who never play, but they're part of the team as well. And they know stuff and they want to share stuff. And I mean, somebody told me this a long time ago, that it doesn't matter what job you work for. People love to complain about their boss and they love to complain about their coworkers. It doesn't matter if you're an NBA player, you work at the Athletic. So if you walk in and they see a familiar face and hey, I want to complain about Evan Gentry. Let me go chop it up with Will real quick. We used to get stuff like that all the time, and now it's just non-existent because we only talk to the star players or the guy who had 20 after the game, and those conversations just don't exist.
And maybe that's why teams are in favor of it, would be in favor of it, because after a game, we only get the players who had good games. We don't get the guys who screw up. They're in charge of that.
Man, they don't want to give us access. Like, that's the thing. Like, they don't want to give us access. They feel like they have to.
And
that, you take that away.
That's a real void when you can't get the guy who missed a shot with 5 seconds left. You can't get – there's a lot of circumstances where, a guy goes 3 for 21, star goes 3 for 21. Oh, we don't get him,
Mm-hmm.
The early stages of a war is brewing between the media and the NBA. It's not just in LA with the Lakers power struggle. The war is brewing.
You could sit down with Grant Williams and he's a super sharp dude and he would tell you what was going on with different strategies and he would tell you like why this works, why that works. Back when Evan Turner was with the Celtics, he was probably the most interesting, funny character the Celtics have had during my time. Nowadays, he was a sixth man, seventh man. We wouldn't even be talking to him. Like, we wouldn't have had a chance to get to know an awesome character who I think a lot of fans loved because, the stuff that he would say in the press, how funny he was. It really limits the amount of talking to the guys that are the stars, and that's sad.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
I'm going to limit the talking on this segment because it's gone on very long. So we go to take five, Chris Paul down. Suns panic? Suns Chris Paul will be reevaluated in 6 to 8 weeks. For an avulsion fracture in his right thumb. 6 weeks would mean he's returning with 5 regular season games to go. The injury could be a massive blow to a Suns team with the league's best record. Paul averaging 14.9 points and a league-leading 10.7 assists for the currently 48-win Suns. Hurt his thumb during the third quarter last week in a win over the Rockets. During his media availability on Saturday, Paul was asked about his injury while he did his best to evade it. He admitted it was frustrating. So, Jay, is it much ado about nothing because of the Suns and their cushion over the Warriors in the Western Conference? And this injury could actually be a blessing in disguise to give everybody else some time on the court and give him the much needed rest heading into the playoffs? Or is this cause for concern in the desert?
I don't think it's too much cause for concern. The thing that would concern me the most if I were on Phoenix right now is just the timeline of it. If he has a setback, all of a sudden he could be missing time in the playoffs. And that's when it could become an issue. I still don't think this Phoenix team will miss a beat from this. They have enough of a cushion. They'll still probably be the number one seed by the time Chris Paul gets back. They're enough of a machine. They're the best executing team in the NBA, to me at least. And I don't see this changing that. Whenever Chris Paul gets back, they're going to be able to hop right back into that. The problem is, if it is on the 8 week, closer to the 8 weeks, if it extends beyond 8 weeks and he has some sort of setback, then maybe that'll be an issue in the playoffs. But I just think this team has so much depth, they'll be able to come it. They have so much defense, they'll be able to overcome it. And by the time Chris Paul gets back, like, it'll be totally fine.
Yeah, Will, it's like even if it was the 8 weeks for Chris Paul, like, okay, so now he doesn't get to play in the sweep of the Lakers in the first round. Like, I don't know that there's going to be a big deal here for them. Like, I look at it as, like, as long as it's healed when he gets back and it's not a reoccurring problem, like, I personally don't think it's an issue, but maybe I'm wrong there.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think they got a big enough cushion for the one seed where they'll be fine. We've seen them play okay without CP. Like you said, I think that they'll probably destroy whoever they get in that first round series, whoever makes it out of the play-in tournament. So I think they don't really need a healthy CP probably until they get to the second round. So I think they'll be fine, and he'll have plenty of time to get rested up before that second round gets here. But to me, I think the most interesting part of him being out this long, it has nothing to do with CP or Devin Booker. I want to see DeAndre Ayton over these next 6 to 8 weeks, because he's a guy who's telling everybody that he deserves a max contract, and the Phoenix Suns elected to not give him that max contract. And now we're going to see for the next few weeks, what does life look like in Phoenix post Chris Paul? If Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton are your two best players, how good are you? Are you a real contender to win the West? Or are you more like a 4-5 seed? And I think we get to see that now. And we've watched all season in the storyline attached to this Phoenix team. Well, at least for guys, nerdy guys like me, is, man, CP makes all of these centers look so good. Bismack Biyombo, Jalen Smith, Frank Kaminsky, it doesn't matter who they put at center, CP makes them look good. And now CP's gone. So what does DeAndre Ayton look like when he's kind of on his own and has to create his own offense at least a little bit more often? So I think that's going to be super interesting, because when you're talking about team building and what the West is going to look like for the next 4 to 5 years, I think that DeAndre Ayton question is going to be a big one in Phoenix, if they pay him all that money or if they move on and decide to go elsewhere at the center position. I think it's a big question, and I think these next 6 to 8 weeks is going to be a big time for him to prove what kind of player he can be and what type of leader he can be for that Phoenix squad, you know, because CP is not going to be there forever. So Eventually it's got to be, you know, the Devin Booker and Ayton show, and just how far can those two guys take him?
Yeah, to plug something of my own on The Athletic, I did a breakdown of post players. I did a breakdown of pick and roll bigs, and DeAndre Ayton was top five in both those. Top five post player this year, top five pick and roll guy, also top five number one pick and roll guy, JaVale McGee. A lot of those pick and rolls are with Chris Paul running the show. And so, you know, they do have a Cameron Payne who did well with those guys, but he's been out with a wrist injury. You know, Devin Booker is a capable playmaker. Like, they bring in Aaron Holiday. They have Elfrid Payton. Like, they do have point guard depth, Jay, like you mentioned. But a lot of that success from Ayton, you know, I think you would probably chalk that up to Chris Paul's putting him in position to, you know, to succeed there. And so how does that look when Chris Paul gets removed for a month or two?
Yeah, and I want to see Devin Booker too. Because Chris Paul, as good as Devin Booker is, Chris Paul is often the one running the show. He's the one getting guys in the right spots. He's the one making sure they've executed like they have. Their fourth quarter numbers, their clutch numbers are just ridiculous. And it's good that they have been, because that's what's given them the cushion they have in the Western Conference, where they should be able to stay in the top seed. But now Chris Paul's gone. And so it's on Devin Booker now to make sure that team is organized, that guy like DeAndre Ayton is still getting the lob opportunities and all that stuff to get him going, that Jay Crowder and Bridges are getting the right opportunities for those guys, because they're not guys who are going to create for themselves very often. And so right. I think there's just a lot on Devin Booker's shoulders now over the next 6 to 8 weeks, because there's a huge void of playmaking. They're not like a ton of those other teams where everyone they have is a top playmaker. They're pretty much built around the fact that Chris Paul and Devin Booker are going to create most of everything for them, or at least like start the attack on most plays. And so now having one of those two guys out, there's a lot on Devin Booker, and I think he's ready for it. Like, that dude is really freaking good.
He was a good playmaker the year before Chris Paul got there. And so I don't know, maybe it looks like Devin Booker should be the full-time lead guard. Maybe we're in the early stages of a war in Phoenix. Maybe there's a war in Phoenix. There's a war in LA. There's just a war everywhere in the NBA, the early days of it, as we try to decide, are we archers? Are we cavalry? What are we? Are you the guy that just stands in the field holding up the flag? Which that was a weird high risk, like, low reward. Yeah. Oh, that's why you do, the archery, man. You fire off an arrow. You just have to fire into the sky. You don't even, like, it doesn't even matter if you hit your own guys. Like, they're just like, hey, that's the cost of those guys going in. Like, we'll just fire that thing in the sky, and then you just hide behind a tree. And you wait for it, like, all right, we're going to shoot another one. You just fire it back into the sky.
I feel like that's I could kind of be like a Tyrion Lannister type, you know, like just devising the plans to take down civilizations.
Yeah, I could definitely get drunk and just sleep with women and then pretend to, like, run things. Yeah, I could do that. I could definitely be a Tyrion Lannister type of person.
Yeah, I think I would just outsmart people in the battlefield.
I would outsmart the people on my side so that I didn't have to go fight. That's what I would do. I think that's the move. Honestly, yeah. And then just occasionally be like, you guys know I love archery. I'll just do
my own side would probably just, like, end up shooting an arrow through my... They'd be so sick of me, they'd just turn around and boom!
Do you think it's possible to cheddar bomb...
Oh, my bad,
Jay. Do you think it's possible to cheddar bomb yourself with an arrow?
Sorry, I didn't see you there.
I can see a bunch of people at The Athletic absolutely doing that. Speaking of The Athletic, that's going to do it for this week's Point of Contention. Don't forget to subscribe to The Athletic Podcast Network. All the shows on there. We got, let's see, Anything Is Potable, No Dunks, Glue Guys, Warriors Plus Minus, Down to Dunk, Sixers Beat, Forum Club, Game Notes, and Michelle Beadle's podcast. What Did I Miss with Michelle Beadle? Every Tuesday and Thursday. For Will, for Jay, for Jade, I'm Zach. Keep it locked in on The Athletic and subscribe, for crying out loud.
Coach Nat, rather than communicate by Zoom, to come down on the stage and demonstrate to everyone what you're able to do at these clinics. Holy cow. I mean, we've heard a lot about him during the pandemic, but I've never stood next to him.
My role is to help coach, train, develop the next generation of NBA talent.
Here's my second plan. Back in the 60s, I developed a weather-changing machine, which was in essence a sophisticated heat beam, which we called a laser. Using these lasers...